is Jonathan Fogel, and you are listening to Mac Edition Radio.
This is Harris Fogel at PMA in Las Vegas, and I'm with James Carr Jones of Virtus Corporation. How are you, James?
I'm very well, thanks. Nice to be here.
So as long as photographs have been around, folks have been trying to extract images, extract people, extract products from the photographs. Of course, in the Stalinist era, they would suddenly erase people out of images. In the modern era, in digital, you can use Photoshop tools, for instance, lasso tool, or create a clipping path to isolate an object. But it's very laborious and very time-consuming, right?
Yeah, no, it takes a long time, because what you have to do is you have to get approximately to the edge, or get an approximate estimation of where the edge is, run some tools, for instance, a lasso tool, or automatically, or you actually use your pen tool to do it manually. You get near the edge, and then what happens is the filter tool will decide what is definitely foreground and what is definitely background, and then it will take an approximation of the transition between the two. Now, the difference with us is that we started from a completely different baseline. We looked at how the best science at the moment on the way the eye and the brain perform visual processing and the way that it pulls shapes out. And our hypothesis was always that there is no such thing as a 3-pixel or 5-pixel bezel in the real world. Actually, there is edges have all kinds of artifact in them. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you look at your hand, you'll see it's got little hairs on it, and that actually makes up an edge. If you look at a photograph, you'll see that some edges in focus are thin and some edges are out of focus, and some edges are distorted by hair or distorted by the wool on a jumper. And so we wanted to pull all that detail out. We spent a lot of time working out, instead of filtering, which, as I say, as a client, I think is a sort of fairly basic way of doing it, we do decontamination. We decontaminate the foreground and the background, and that requires that we understand the morphology of that edge. Because an edge can actually have, every edge will have its own specific character, and if you can pull that character out, then you can do some fantastic things with those edges. You could, you know, in the future, you could transform them. Imagine if you were inside an image editing tool, you could click on an object and find that object, and then you can transform its color, texture, whatever you want, but within the image and not having to use a layer path. And that's what we really believe in. We think that image editing should become simple to use so that people can go out and do what they do best, which is actually taking great photographs, as opposed to getting degrees in software packages like Photoshop, for instance.
Now, I know that when I've tested and reviewed many of these solutions over the last dozen years or so, they always seem to give you the option of a squirrel against a blue background or the blonde hair against a bright blue background. And those are very easy, you know, differentiations. But I know that I've seen you work with things like a soccer player against a field and the grass and about the backgrounds. And it's a much more complicated set of paradigms. I mean, actually, the foreground, the background, all those things are really, they blur. How do you, from a software point of view, try to analyze and figure out what is foreground, what is background, and pull out that object?
I think the answer is that we don't do all images brilliantly. And the reason for that is because image formats have limitations. And you'll also find there's a huge amount of compression artifact inside of images. And all these things distort the results you have. But by and large, provided the thing is relatively in focus and there's enough data in there, you'll pull out the background. Unless, of course, you know, it's a polar bear in a snowstorm, in which case you're just not going to have a cat's chance in hell. But by and large, we try and do that. And we think actually right now, it's a percentages game. In other words, we do 80 to 90% of images really well, and there's some images we just don't do well. And a really good example is when you have a distortion between, you have foreground that is both darker and lighter than background in close proximity. A really good example of that would be a hair that is in the light, so it's translucent and quite bright, and then a hand that's next door to it that would be in shadow and therefore would be darker. And you could imagine that each is both, one of them's darker than the background and one of them's lighter than the background. And the program really has a problem, and all blending programs have a problem, and says, hey, you know, which one is foreground? Make up your mind, guys. And that's when it all tends to go wrong. Now, we're actually working on an algorithm which is in prototype at the moment, which propagates this belief that two things of that are both darker and lighter than the background can be foreground. And when we get that, then we'll have really perfect hair blending against, you know, reasonable backgrounds. I don't think we're at the stage yet where we get that kind of behavior against a very, very complex background, but we'll eventually get there. I think the real problem is actually computing power as opposed to the algorithms.
So the quality of the image has a real impact on the successful extraction of data, right? So I'm assuming that a really high-quality TIFF or a file derived from a high-quality RAW is going to give you the best option, whereas a JPEG with a lot of compression artifacts confuses it, right?
Oh, absolutely. The compression artifact is what kills all, you know, fine detail work within images. So you've got to push it off. I mean, the problem for RAW images that we have at the moment is that RAW image data actually comes down to different camera manufacturers have different formats, so it hasn't really been properly standardized yet, so we have a problem working on RAW, but we really want to, and because I think there's a huge future in RAW image manipulation. I think it's a fantastic way to play with images.
So the current workflow for a RAW person is to open up the RAW file, do a conversion to a high quality TIFF, and then put Fluid Mask to work on it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So let's talk about Fluid Mask. You're currently in version 2, but have been just about on the edge of releasing version 3 any day now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've actually been holding off for that blending that we were talking about. I mean, we've had the thing sort of built. And really, there are three things about version 3 that we're pulling out. I think the first one, obviously, is the blending, and be able to get super blending. And I think hair is a big issue for everybody. Talk to anybody about blending, they say hair. The next thing is workflow. Amongst professional users, there's always been a problem with workflow, and that is incorporating our product into their workflow. And one of the key issues is that amongst professional users, they have, say, 100 shots from a studio shot that day. And what they want to do is they want to standardize all the settings so that they can cut the backgrounds off all the images, and we allow them to save the settings. We also recognize that there's a 90-10 rule in image editing, especially in cutting out, and that's is that for every image, it takes 10% of the time to do 90% of the image, and then 90% of the time to do 10% of the image. And so we've got a whole sort of array of new tools and new behavior which allows you to deal with that 10% of image. So, for instance, you can do variable blending within a certain area, and you can do variable edge finding within that area. And we've got other bits and pieces in there, but, I mean, it's just a much better-looking, more professional product. We've built it from the ground up again. Compared with version 2, there's not one single piece of code from version 2 that's in version 3. It's a completely new build.
Fluid Mask is cross-platform, and I understand it's also universal binary, so it works on the new Intel Macs as well, right?
Yes, it does. It does work on the new Intel Macs. And the other thing we've done is we've multi-threaded it, so as many cores as you have in your machine, it will speed up by that function. So it's a lot faster, and it works on universal binary, and we're very proud of it.
So can you describe for our listeners what the workflow is if somebody wants to pull a person out of a background and then use that for another image?
Yeah, the workflow is ultimately we're a masking product. So what you're doing is you're laying down one mask, so the background mask or the foreground mask, whichever is easiest, and then you automatically put in the other mask or the alternative masks, and then Fluid Mask will work out what the transition looks like in the blend between the two masks. So the first thing you do is you lay down the easiest mask, and usually that's the background. So you swipe with a brush around the background, and you have various tools to make it very quick. You swipe around the background, and then you go straight into Create Cutout, and it'll do a very good cutout of that object. But you'll find that there are bits where you'll probably find, usually it does it perfectly, but you'll find maybe that there are bits that haven't been done properly. And what you do then is you select an area using a thing called a patch, and then within that you can make new masks, you can make mask changes, or you can change the blending, or you can do whatever you want within that patch to get it right. So that what you're doing is you're going from a large image, get it down to the problem areas, deal with the problem areas, and then you're finished. So it's fairly swift, and it's really sort of conquering that last 10%. That's where all the effort is, because otherwise people spend forever and struggling and pulling their hair out while masking and trying to get it just right and end up saying, oh, what the hell, it'll be all right on the night.
Now, Photoshop has some limitations that prevent you from making a completely non-destructive version. So what do you recommend? People should work on a copy of the file first?
Yeah, make a copy first and then work on the copy and then bring that back as a transparency layer. And then you can do whatever you want with it. At least that's a non-destructive workflow.
Well, I want to thank James Carr-Jones of Virtus for spending time with us today. James, where can our listeners find out more information about Fluid Mask?
Well, we've got a website, and that's probably the biggest resource for us. It's www.vertustech.com, VERTUSTECH.com. And then one of the things that we've got is that every day we do live training from the website. So you can call a toll-free number, and you can talk to somebody and see their desktop on yours using WebEx. And it's a great tool to find out how it works and see somebody use it, ask questions, because that's what we have. And that's also for anybody who's either bought it or is thinking of buying it. There's always that available to them, and it happens every day.
Thanks a whole lot for spending time with us, James.
My pleasure, Harris. It was great to see you again.
For Mac Edition Radio, this is Harris Fogel. You've been listening to Mac Edition Radio. The contents are copyright 2007 and cannot be reproduced without written consent.